I was at the Inc. Magazine conference in October of 2018. Brené Brown spoke. Dare to Lead had come out, I think, that week. She talked about her book, Dare to Lead, with our listeners. If you want, if you're interested in work culture, doesn't matter what level you are at, read Dare to Lead. It's very, very impactful. But it's a book on leadership grounded in research. And she, her talk was 45 minutes, but it was, it blew my mind. I got the book. I read it in 2 days. I came back from, I believe I was in San Antonio. I came back, reread it the next week. So read it twice in basically a week. Then I did a book club with our, like our leaders at the time. We didn't have flock leaders. And then in December of that year, so 6 weeks later, we got together as a team to create our company core values, because the book comes with a really cool, like kind of like book club handout, which, you know, cause you've led the book club before, but it has it for individuals and it has it for companies. And so I knew we were working on this as a company. And so in reading the books the three times, it's really interesting. My brain's getting murky of the order it happened. I believe my two original values were like ownership and showing up. I knew the first value, we knew fun was going to be a value of good, or like that was clandestine. Like that was a word, and like that was happening. It was co-founders Ben and Carrie that were the ones that were like, it's authenticity for the second one. I wanted it to be ownership. And they're like, Steven, you are the most authentic person that we know. Like, this is the most authentic company. And so they walked me off that ledge.
Welcome to the Culture Gooder podcast, a behind the shades look at creating and changing culture inside of Gooder sunglasses.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to the Culture Gooder podcast. I'm Steven Lee, CEO and co-founder of Gooder. With me, Sean Tenney. Sean, welcome.
Hey, good to see you, Steven.
We've been doing a series on the brand directive. If you've not listened to episode 85, I encourage you to go back to it to really understand the context for this series. But in the brand directive, we have four articles. We have our ethos. This is aspirational. This is why we exist. We have our playbook. This is actionable. This is how we behave. We have our anchors. This is foundational. These are the things we need to succeed. And then we have sunglasses, which is tangible. This is the product that we make. And today we are talking about specifically the ethos, how that came to be and what it means. So excited to have everybody here.
Yeah. Well, stoked to be here. I'm excited for us to get to each of those. But I think one of the things that's always been appealing to me about Gooder and resonated so much with me personally is the ethos of Gooder, the why we exist and kind of the philosophy behind the company. So let's dive in there and just start with why did you choose the word ethos to represent this, and how do you define it, Steven?
Yeah, I think until this talk, I'm not sure if ethos really kind of showed up in our zeitgeist. And as I was going through the practice, what I talked about in previous episodes of defining every single buzzword in our culture, I did a mind dump of just other words that kind of were peripherally out there. And I had ethos in a mind dump. And so every word that I had, I went through and one of my creative processes is I just start pulling threads and I see where they take me. And sometimes you look up the definition of something and then the Webster's Dictionary definition is great. Other times it doesn't work for, it doesn't make sense. Like the definition of authenticity, which is one of our core values in like the one of the dictionaries was, you know, the ability to be authentic or something like, and I'm well, thank you for that fucking gem. Right. And so I'll go any different ways. Sometimes I'll look at quotes to kind of get more of an essence that resonates with like what I'm trying to capture. And somewhere in my thread, I heard somebody talk about ethos as like the spirit of a culture. And I was like, oh, that's a really interesting thing. So I just kind of like labeled it as like the ethos. This is like the spirit of our culture. And as I started putting these things together, I didn't have the clever names at first. The ethos, playbook, anchors, sunglasses was one of the very last things that I did actually. And when I was kind of bucketing them together, I had the whole idea of the why, how, what, and aspirational, actionable, tangible. And but then I'm like, well, for the team to understand this, right, you need to, my job as a marketer is I need to make sure I sell ideas. I need people to understand what I'm saying. And so when I was kind of searching for a word that captured origin, mission, values, vision, this very aspirational thing, and I saw this definition that I captured earlier of ethos as the spirit of our culture, I'm like, got it. There it is. You know, it is the why. It is designed to be a little, to be aspirational, to be esoteric. And so, yeah, so it was just, it was a result of a lot of work, and then didn't know how I was going to use it. And there's a bunch of those words that I didn't use. This one just kind of rose to the top.
Nice. Yeah, well, that's great. I mean, it does capture the spirit of things. So I know there was a couple of sort of mantras that led us to our mission and our values and our vision. But as you step back and look at that, like from the beginning, how would you describe the spirit of our culture?
Man, it was fun, absurdity, celebrating the work over the results. When I go back and I retrace our origin, you know, we started Gooder because we were runners. We didn't think there were any brands out there that spoke to fun and fashion. And so we started Gooder because we thought running was fun and your gear should be too. And so that is at our core root. And when I retrace the first couple of years, you know, Ben, Carrie, and myself, we didn't pay ourselves for the first couple of years, or when we did, it was very little. And there was, well, one of the gifts we gave ourselves was starting as a side hustle. And so this combination of having fun and not having to make a living off it was great. But you realize, you know, we define fun now as celebrating the work or the results. Man, the first couple of years, that's all it was. It was work, and your result was you sold more sunglasses, so you had to figure out how to buy more sunglasses. And so that was like the core. I think that was the core. And I think absurdity was really in the core, which is rooted in like fun has a multiple ways of thinking about it. You know, we're not a party brand, we're a fun brand. But at our core, it was, we loved, you know, what I'll say is we work really, you know, like we work really hard at having fun, or there is not, we will go through very great lengths for a joke. And that is for sure very rooted in our beginning. And, you know, our origin here, we're recklessly committed to fun, blah, 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 sunglasses. We didn't write that clever quip till 2018. We did have an original mission statement that is not as cool, but it was around having fun, and we use the word Gooder inside of the mission statement. That's where like our OG mission statement come. But as soon as we wrote, we had an origin, we knew what we were doing. It was this idea of fun. And then once we kind of got big enough, I revisited the mission with two co-founders, Carrie and Ben, and then Mike Eddie, who was our first employee, our creative director. And I was like, hey, we need to actually rewrite a mission statement that we believe in. And that's when we wrote, we're recklessly committed to fun, blah, 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 sunglasses. And that, I believe, was our core until 2008, till the end of, till the beginning of 2020, we identified our values. And then we kind of started realizing like, oh, I think that there's a difference here. So I don't know, like that was a bit of a ramble, but really like that's kind of like where we started. And and I think the encouragement there for anybody, you can start with an idea that's aspirational, having fun, and then you can write, you can have that, get out whatever lame mission statement you can, point yourself in a direction and fucking go. You could come back and wordsmith it later. We have wordsmithed everything. Do not let live into done is better than perfect, right? Like, so I want to just core that, like, you all are hearing very great quips now because we've been doing this for a living for years. Our original mission statement was not this cool, so I know I gotta preface that for everybody.
Yeah, no, that's great. I mean, I think that The story you just told, Steven, speaks to a desire to improve an experience, right? You're running, you're in gear that's just making you feel like a fool, and you're like, there's got to be a better way, right? And then you design that better way. The process of getting to clarity on all the things that we're going to talk about today, it's like you got to kind of make a mess and like goof around a bit before you realize, it's this, and then you get to that point of clarity. But that's an ongoing process.
Yeah, for sure, right? That is also the spirit of our culture is making mistakes. But this idea of just start anywhere, get a little bit better as you go. And then, you might wake up one day 9 years down the road and you find yourself spending hours upon hours writing a brand directive talk for company 150.
One can only hope.
Yeah, one can only hope.
Yeah. And then I think on the fun side too, just noted, you founded this company with your friends and the first glasses were flamingos on a booze cruise. Like the whole point was to have fun, right?
Yeah, the whole point was to have fun, right? And we've done that and we've lived into it and still great friends with my co-founders, which I'm incredibly grateful for. And along the way, we realized what? Fun is our origin and it's in our DNA and it will never go away. But as I started to actually engage with more customers, I started to realize the kind of the authenticity piece, which led us to our current mission of we exist to give you permission to be unabashedly yourself unless you're an asshole. This thing, I would go around and visit retailers and I would have this visceral reaction. People would talk to me about the brand. Some of them retail store owners, some of them people who walked in off the street. I tell this one story during my brand director talk about being in a Fleet Feet, I believe in South Carolina, trying to sell the store owner. And as I'm sitting there, a person walks in the door and goes, "Hey, do you sell Gooder sunglasses?" This is back in 2016, 17 maybe. And the store owner goes, "We will shortly." This is the founder and this person, how they lit up to me and talked about the brand was wild. I'm like, oh, I think that, I think there's something else going on here that I didn't quite appreciate. And then I did.
Yeah, right. Well, so that is a spirit of the culture kind of thing, right? Because what were the kinds of things someone lights up? What are they talking to you about in that moment in that store?
I think it's so interesting. I think, as we get through this, I think the accessibility we grant our customers is really something cool and I'm proud of. And I think that, so in the moments, I think it's, we talk about this quite often. We have the four F's. We have fun, fashionable, functional, affordable. And so I think that customers enter through one of the F's and they might enter through the functional F because they're in a run store and the sunglasses are there, but they might stay because of the fun. I think at the core, when people are lighting up viscerally, it is because I always think the affordability is there because we give people access. So that is universal. I usually think it's directly related to either the fun and just the here's a brand who's not taking themselves so seriously. I think that there's just a powerful thing in that. Or, man, I think that a lot of times people just want to be more fun and vibrant than they are. But when you're spending $200 on a pair of glasses, you can't buy the flamingos on a booze cruise. And I think for certain people, this is the first time they've been able to maybe have something cool and bright that they normally wouldn't have that way, if that makes sense.
It absolutely does. And I'm thinking, at different phases of a company's growth, you're going to have a different experience. But when it's you out there at the trade shows, at the retailers, you physically saw people pick up the black pair, the safe pair, put it on, and then put it down and pick up an orange one or a pink one. And because it's $25, that's what they walk out with, right?
That's what they walk out with, or they buy both, right? And
right, sure.
And then now I think that I was talking to Greg, who's on our team. He's our flock leader of our supply chain team. Because Gooder's at a point now where people actually will come into the brand and start working here. I think Greg started here in 2022, I believe. But he started buying Gooder's in 2018. So he was just a fan of the brand, a customer of ours before I started working here. And I was on a run with him a couple weeks ago, and I was asking him, well, tell me your origin story of how'd you come to Gooder? And it was always had expensive sunglasses, sick of losing them, got an email from his run shop in Georgia, went and bought a pair. And then he had in such detail. He's like, when he clearly went back in the system and looked at it, he's like, and then 3 months later, I bought two more pairs and was talking it through. And I go, oh, so you came for function, but you stayed for the price point. He goes, no, I came for function and I stayed for the fun. He's like, I saw other brands out there. You know, he's like, I like fishing of girls like wearing sunglasses and a bikini. And I'm like, they don't, this brand doesn't get me. And then finally, I just saw the stuff y'all are doing. I'm like, this is it. And I think that story is very, I believe people have a similar feeling of, oh, wow, somebody's not taking themselves so seriously. And somebody's not trying to be something that they're not. I think people really resonate with the authenticity piece of it. And in turn, allows them to be authentic themselves or gives them access to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that we're all seeking, right? Is like, what is my authentic self? How can I express myself, you know, truly and freely? And to have, I think that's like the definition of leadership, right? It's just action. And as a brand, we're taking that action and taking more or less just creating an example of what it means to be unabashedly yourself so that others can feel like, you know what? Yeah, that's what I'm going to do too with this pair on. With this outfit at the same time.
Yeah, right? Like I talked about, with great power comes great responsibility. And
yeah,
we created this amazing brand. It is bigger than I could have ever imagined. And now cultivating it in the right way is very, very important. And I think as we, you know, created the values of fun and authenticity, this part of this ethos, maybe some of the hardest work we've had to do is actually taking this idea of this thing of like, we want people to have fun. We want people to be authentic. And then, but how do we ground it in actual actionable behaviors for our internal team? It's probably been the hardest thing, and like harder in a fun way, but I don't know. I find that some of the most rewarding work that we get to do is being like, as a leader, leading by example and like, not just say, we're fun, air horn, saying like, no, we're fun. Here's what fun is. It is showing up this way and taking pride in your work. And, you know the rest.
Yeah, yeah. And that's probably why you got to the point where you were saying, hey, we're not a personal development brand that sells sunglasses. We're a sunglass brand that cares about personal development.
Yes. Very important.
Yeah.
Both things are very true.
Mm-hmm. So look, speaking to values, I know this came from Brené Brown, right? Dare to Lead, all the work that she did there. Yeah. So that was hugely impactful. Did you start from when you heard that the first time? Were you like, okay, what are my personal values? Or did you go straight to company values? How'd you process that?
I was at the Inc. Magazine conference in October of 2018. Brené Brown spoke. Dare to Lead had come out, I think, that week. She talked about her book, Dare to Lead, with our listeners. If you're interested in work culture, doesn't matter what level you are at, read Dare to Lead. It's very, very impactful. But it's a book on leadership grounded in research. And her talk was 45 minutes, but it blew my mind. I got the book. I read it in 2 days. I came back from, I believe I was in San Antonio. I came back, reread it the next week. So read it twice in basically a week. Then I did a book club with our leaders at the time. We didn't have flock leaders. And then in December of that year, so 6 weeks later, we got together as a team to create our company core values, because the book comes with a really cool, like kind of like book club handout, which, you know, because you've led the book club before, but it has it for individuals and it has it for companies. And so I knew we were working on this as a company. And so in reading the books the three times, it's really interesting. My brain's getting murky of the order it happened. I believe my two original values were like ownership and showing up. I knew the first value. We knew fun was going to be a value of good, or like that was clandestine. Like that was a word, and like that was happening. It was co-founders Ben and Carrie that were the ones that were like, it's authenticity for the second one. I wanted it to be ownership. And they're like, Steven, you are the most authentic person that we know. Like, this is the most authentic company. And so they walked me off that ledge, and so grateful they did. But we did it together as a team. There was a bunch of people there. And then after that pitch was given to me, I was like, oh, I think maybe my core values are authenticity and showing up. And so it kind of, you know, it morphed, and I kind of landed it. You know, I got to the right place after a while, but it wasn't as fun. Was right away for the brand, and then for me, you know, it's sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's hard, as you know.
Oh yeah, well, sometimes you're too close to see it, right?
Yeah.
Cool. So a big part of this whole initiative is clarity, right? So we've clarified our values. We have the mantras that go with them. I think those are pretty much locked in, right? That's probably not something you're worried about people understanding, but translating that into something that helps us realize a vision is really, that's where the real work comes in, right?
Yeah, I think that this exercise was incredibly clarifying of, man, I don't conceptually know how much time I spent on this talk. I probably don't want to know because it is in the hundreds of hours. But the thing that I think is worth noting is I'm really proud of where we come from. I understand it's a great story. Also, I'm kind of sick of talking about it. And what I mean about that is I'm more interested in what we're going to do, right? I'm focused on the future. And what I've realized in this exercise is we've done such a great job of like, hey, here's our origin. Here's our mission. Here's our values. Here's how we act on the daily. Not such a great job on here is the vision. Here is our ambitious hope. And so as I was doing this, like, oh, that became very clear. We needed to be very clear on that. And you know, our vision is we see a universe of connection and accessibility for all of our customers, no matter why they effing love us. And right, the four Fs. And that piece actually is where I spent maybe the most time in the ethos, because it was the most undefined as part of this process. It will be a primary focus of our brand at this year is that vision and making sure everybody understands it. But yeah, man, I want everybody to understand, like, this is why we're doing it, and us to all be working towards this thing together of creating connection and accessibility for our customers.
So as you're, this is like happening in real time, right? So I want people to understand how you're approaching this, and all of us too, right? So you're defining something that was previously undefined, but that was a pretty solid superpower of yours. And I think you've done an excellent job of communicating very clearly at a high level, all the way down to every department and the individual person in our company, how we're all contributing to this. But defining it and saying a universe of connection and accessibility for all is one thing, right? No matter why they effing love us, right? That's pointing to the four Fs. So you're connecting these dots. Now, how do you see this rolling out? What are you anticipating for how this plays out in the immediate future on a practical level?
Well, we're already doing a lot of the work. I'm just repackaging it and actually showing people so that's part of it. I think that we created the four Fs years ago as the decision matrix for making product. And so for our listeners out there, as a reminder, the four Fs are fun, fashionable, functional, meaning made for an athlete, and affordable. And when your name is the misspelling of a grammatically incorrect word like Gooder, you just fucking make up other words. And for product, fun, we do that with the wild colors, the fun names, our bizarre limited drops. For fashionable, we believe you should be able to wear the same pair of sunglasses whether or not you're going on a date or going on a workout. For functional, everything we do is made for the active lifestyle. It's made for no slip, not to slip when you sweat, not to bounce when you move, all polarized. And then affordable, we target a $25-$35 price point. We try to make it as affordable as possible. And in this 2022, we started actually marketing to hey, we're marketing to the fun customer, to the fashionable customer, to the functional customer, and to the affordable customer, right? So the customer that they care about the fun and absurdity. That's then all right, who cares more about fashion, so on and so forth. And so when you realize that, you're like, oh, we're a product company. We make things that speak to the four Fs. We make it for customers. We make it for one of the four F customers, maybe two of them, but that's there. Marketing connects that together. And so once you kind of understand that, and you know, I visually laid it out, once you kind of understand it, it's almost impossible to unsee. And you're like, oh, got it. Fun customer. We market to them this way with this type of product. And then I think so, like, that is like really was the next step of like, all right, here's how we create accessibility. We do that through our price point. So keeping our costs low is very important. Being very efficient is very important, so we can hit that price point. We have these four Fs. So that's why, you know, and I think from a brand saying, no matter why, they effing love us, just really roots people in. It's actually a really awesome tactic. Like, right? Well, they're going to remember it because who says that in their vision statement? We do. Doesn't stand for fuck. It stands for fun, fashionable, affordable, functional. And so as we move this forward, really taking that vision and then putting actionable things behind it, attaching it to our anchors, ending it with our customers. Or like really, you know, this is the idea. The work that I just explained is the thing that starts actually really matters. This takes, this goes from, you know, it's ideas are cheap, execution's everything. And so that is what we're living into here.
Yeah, totally. All right. So as we look to wrap this up here, I just love one thing that you said in your talk is about managing the changes of our culture to evolve appropriately, right? Recognizing it's not always going to be the same at every different level and size as we grow, but in practice, right? But it can be the same in spirit. And that kind of speaks to the ethos. So what do you see as we continue to evolve our culture, knowing that it's going to continue changing?
I don't know. I wish I did. I think that's something that's very interesting. The people who tend to thrive at Gooder are just amazing at what they do. And so I think in the world, I think the thing that has become very, very clear to me, and this is goes back to the everybody understanding we're a product company that cares about personal development, is at the core, we have amazing operations people, amazing marketing people, amazing product people, amazing people. And so I think the big thing for me is actually once it was shown to me, this is years back, that a culture carrier at Gooder isn't somebody who shows up in a pattern print shirt, cracking jokes. It's somebody who shows up in whatever shirt they fucking want to wear and does really hard work and makes mistakes and owns their mistakes and then does more hard work. And that is what our culture is. And so as we evolve it appropriately, I'm just looking for signal versus noise and saying, oh, I didn't do a good enough job to clarify our culture is our people and our product and our marketing and our operations. So now that's what I'm doing. And so I'm always looking at it, and then I'm evolving it which way I think is best at the time. And I don't know, I think my intuition's been pretty good thus far.
So far, so good.
Yeah. And I've made a lot of mistakes. Very important.
That's failure is a part of success, right?
Always.
Yeah, right on. Well, so let's wrap here and then jump on to the next article in our next episode. Thank you so much for covering all this, Stephen. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Until next time, be excellent to each other.